What's going on, guys? Welcome to the No More Desire podcast. My name is Jake Castleman, founder of Become a Good Man. Today, we're going to talk about something that is very dear to my heart, I guess in a negative sense, as in it's been something that's been a great struggle and trial for me, and a struggle and trial that I've watched in so many of the other addicts that I've spoken with or that I've helped, and that's perfectionism. And it's about the connection of perfectionism and addiction. Because I think as far as my own personal experience, and I'm not sitting here saying I've worked in therapy for 20 years with addicts or anything like that, so don't get me wrong there. But in my experience, over 8 years of sobriety, over 10 years of addiction previous to that, watching many people, including understanding things from my father working with addicts for decades, I've seen a lot of perfectionism in people who struggle with addiction. And I think perfectionism can be, it can be misunderstood, right? Perfectionism sometimes is seen as something that drives us to do more, right? It drives us to do better, to put out more quality work, and that sort of thing. When in reality, yes, there is adaptive perfectionism, which can be that, what I'm saying. I mean, it really can help you achieve more. But then there's maladaptive perfectionism, which in my experience, that's more often the case. I think there are very few adaptive perfectionists, people who use perfectionism as a an advantage. And there are far more people, far more of us addicts who deal with perfectionism that is maladaptive. In other words, it's not helpful. It isn't. It doesn't adapt to life. We can't. It makes us feel stuck. It makes us get decision paralysis. Right. We get overwhelmed by small details. We feel incapable of approaching new things because we're afraid we're going to make mistakes. That kind of thing. If you can relate to that, maybe you deal with perfectionism too. Again, it's something that's really common, I think. So I'm going to talk about that, and I also want to talk about something called guilt and shame addiction. And guilt and shame addiction, other than it popping up in SEO results, is something that I have been thinking a lot about lately. And it's this idea that we become attached to our guilt and to our shame, and shame being that belief that I'm not good enough, right? I'm not worthy of love. I don't belong, I don't do enough, and therefore I am not loved by others, right? That's shame. And then guilt, which can be something that can actually motivate us to change in life, but I'm not really talking about that. I'm talking about guilt that makes us immobile, right? A lot of overlap there between guilt and shame, but there are distinctions. But I'm going to talk about how we get addicted to this guilt and the shame, because that sounds strange. I think for a lot of us, when we think addiction, we think pleasure. We think experiences that raise our dopamine levels in our brain. We think experiences like partying or drugs or sex or rock and roll. I don't know, you could be addicted to that. I probably was. We think of those types of things. So let's talk about, though, why we could be addicted to something that's negative. Well, yeah, we're addicted to pain in that we get addicted to drugs or porn or these things that actually cause pain in our lives. But something as inherently negative and painful as guilt and shame, why would we get addicted to that? So we'll talk about that today too. And, you know, in beginning this, I just want to say that I've been attending 12-step group, and that's really what got me onto this. I want to start by saying it's so important if you're someone who struggles with addiction, before we get into all this stuff about perfectionism and everything else, get a group, get support. I don't have a group. I don't have to refer you to. I'm not promoting my own group. I'm just saying in your local area, go to a 12-step group. Okay, they're totally free. They're in your area. It's really important to get a support system because, well, one of the biggest reasons is getting help, but one of the other reasons is you just learn so much from other people. I've been learning so much from the people in the group, the facilitators, and the other members of the group. who just open up my eyes, people who've had sobriety far longer than I have, or people who are going through addiction right now. They help to open up my eyes to new ideas, new understandings about addiction that I hadn't had, or reminding me of things that I've since forgotten. And that's so important. So join a group, get connected. That is central to sobriety. So as I've been in these groups, you know, we talked about guilt and shame addiction a little bit. And I see the people that I speak with and people that I sponsor struggle with perfectionism. Again, I see it all of the time. And so let's talk about more about that. Perfectionism, what is it, right? If I'm saying addiction and perfectionism match up, that they go hand in hand, they feed off of each other, what is perfectionism? And perfectionism inherently is just this. It's the belief that mistakes that I make will make me unworthy of love. That's what perfectionism is. If I make mistakes, they'll make me unworthy of love. Plain and simple. At least that's my understanding of it, as it's something that I've struggled with throughout my life. It's better now than it once was. It's still something that I struggle with. And that's all right. That's part of life. It's part of being human. And it's actually part of overcoming, or I shouldn't say overcoming, it's part of managing perfectionism better or addiction better, to understand that you do struggle, that you do have a hard time with these things, that you're never going to truly fully overcome anything, right? I've been sober for years, but am I free of addiction cravings entirely? No. Those things come up, you know, every now and again. Those are things that hit me. Okay, and then I got to deal with those thoughts and move through them through God's good grace. All right, and something I also want to say is I'm going to be talking about Christ on my podcast now. For those of you who aren't Christian, I apologize in that maybe it doesn't pertain to you. You can replace it with your higher power. But I am Christian, and I've decided I just need to be real, and I need to be true to my beliefs. So I will be talking about Christ on the podcast here and there, because that's true for me. That's real for me, right? Whatever that, if you're Taoist, if you're Buddhist, if you're of the Hindu faith, that's awesome. I love that. You know, I've been very inspired by those works and writings. I've read the Tao Te Ching. I've read from books of Buddhism. I've read the Bhagavad Gita. But we need to be, I think especially these days, when we are facing so much of this mainstream garbage about we can't express our faith in God, we can't express our faith in Christ, that's old-fashioned now, that we need to be just vanilla when it comes to talking about God or higher power. I think that we need to be true to our faith. And that doesn't mean forcing it on other people. That doesn't mean shoving it down their throats. It just means honoring our beliefs and then honoring just the same the beliefs of others. So anyway, that's a long tangent. I go off on a lot of them, but I'm going to be talking about Christ. So when it comes to perfectionism, it doesn't lead to higher productivity. It really inherently is this, in some ways, it's that we start to do things our way. We believe that all the pressure is on us rather than knowing that we are children of God and knowing that we are inherently divine and that we can have the peace and love of God, the peace and love of Christ work within us to do good in our lives. Okay, that's a big part of it. I think that's ultimately what could change all of it for us if we realized that. But it's really, really hard to remember that in this life, right? But it's also, it's that fear of mistakes. It's that it actually cuts us off from trying new things because we're afraid that we won't be the best, right? And so this is really, really similar to addiction in ways, okay? And you're probably connecting with this. If you struggle with addiction, you're probably connecting with some of the things that I'm saying about perfectionism. It's really similar to addiction. And the reason for that is that both perfectionism and addiction function on shame. Okay, shame, in other words, the belief I'm not good enough. It's the belief I'm not worthy of love. It's also the belief I'm not capable of loving. We won't talk too much about that here probably, but those are ultimately some of our greatest fears. I'm not worthy of love. I'm not capable of loving. Perfectionism and addiction both depend on that fear, on those beliefs. And so when we struggle with perfectionism, we will often struggle with addictions in various fashions. I'm not saying necessarily 100%, but some kind of an addiction is probably present, because perfectionism is, it causes a lot of stress in our lives. It causes a high degree of negative mental and emotional pain. And so we do seek out addictions to cope with that. And throughout my life, just to give you an idea, you know, if you have other people in your life that do struggle with perfectionism, or you struggle with it, I've been addicted to a lot of different things. It doesn't have to be drugs or sex or porn. It can be things, even things that seem positive, like exercise or like nutrition. Those are things that I've been addicted to in my life. It's still stuff that I need to be very, very much aware of, and placing my mind upon things that bring me peace, rather than doing things my way and placing all of my worth and my importance on something like my body looking just right, or upon me eating just the right way, because I need to feel exactly right. And unfortunately, when it comes to addiction and perfectionism, the one of the keys is that selfishness is involved, right? And I don't say that as in like, man, you're selfish, you're an addict, therefore you suck. I'm not saying that at all, by any means. What I am saying is that inherently addiction is a selfish thing, and inherently perfectionism is a selfish thing. And that's simply because we are focusing on ourselves, our wants, our needs, the ways others perceive us. It's all of the ego, in other words, right? What people think of us, how people perceive us, our identity, rather than basing our identity on the fact that we are a child of God, that we are all brothers and sisters, that we are all one. We are basing our worth on other things. And so when we feel shame and we feel guilt, I'm not good enough, I don't do enough, right? And we're focusing on the self, what I want, what I need, I'm not enough, right? Then we are failing to do those things that would actually bring us peace, that would actually bring us out of addiction. Because as long as we're focused on ourselves, we cannot come out of addiction. If we focus outward towards others and upward to God, we can break free of addiction and we can break free of perfectionism. Again, does that mean I will never face another addiction craving? No, that doesn't mean that. It also doesn't mean that I won't feel perfectionism at some point in my life. Does it mean I think that ultimately in eternity we will become free of these things entirely? I do believe that. But as far as in this life, I'm not sure. Maybe if you do, you tell me how you did it, because I'd love to hear. Even after years of sobriety, still struggle with perfectionism. And that's a hard thing. And I know a lot of people who struggle with the same. So let's talk about why guilt and shame can be addictive, and why guilt and shame addiction is at the core of other addictions. Why is that? Okay, and how can we become addicted to something that is so negative, like guilt and shame? Put simply, it's because our pleasure-centered part of our brain values intensity. Okay, and this is something my dad taught me after his years of work within the field of the brain science of addiction. Our brain values intensity, and it doesn't care what that intensity is, negative or positive. Okay, and so again, I'm not talking about the better parts of your brain, like the ones that that are your director, right? Your prefrontal cortex that's actually pushing you to, your prefrontal cortex, put simply, that can drive you to do good things in life. I'm talking about the limbic system. In other words, the pleasure-centered part of the brain, the primitive brain, right? That just wants pleasure. It just wants its needs met. It doesn't care if that intensity that it craves comes in a negative form. So something like shame is a very intense emotion, right? And we can become addicted to it simply because it is intense. You'll see things like this with people who constantly go back to abusive relationships. I've done that in my life. Fortunately, I'm married to a good woman now who's been a blessing to me. But throughout my teenage years and early 20s, I kept going back to abusive relationships and emotionally abusive relationships. And the reason that I did that is because the drama was intense. It was also because of habits I developed as a child, or maybe other relationships that I had with family members or friends or things like that, that I developed habits of, this is how people love me, therefore that is what I will accept. That's the love I will accept. We don't accept the love that we should have, right? We accept the love we think we deserve based upon our previous experiences, unless we become aware of those faulty ways of thinking and we change them. And the only way we can change them, I testify, is through the grace of God. That is the only way to be able to permanently change. And for me as a Christian, that's the grace of Christ. And so what we need to start to do in order to see that guilt and shame are an addiction is we need to witness when our brain is going into that space, going into the space, I'm not good enough, right? Let's say that I say something rude to my wife and then she's hurt, and then I'm going inward and focusing on myself. Oh man, I can't believe I did that. Man, what a jerk I am. You know, I should be better. You know, why can't I figure this out? Or I can deflect that by turning to anger, right? Well, this is her fault because she did this or that, or she should stop doing this and making me angry, or I wouldn't have done that if she wouldn't have done this, right? These are all thoughts of the primitive brain, of the ego, things that we fall back on because truly of the fear that we are unlovable or we are not capable of loving, right? And this feeds the addictions in our lives. This is the intense emotion that is the guilt and shame addiction. And when we are when we experience that frequently enough in our lives, eventually it becomes a habit, right? If we constantly are going back on ourselves and saying, what's wrong with me? Why can't I figure this out? Why can't I be better? People hate me. They don't love me. You know, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough, right? And these can become so deeply ingrained in our mind that they become unconscious. We don't even recognize we're thinking those thoughts or feeling those feelings. They just become the way that we think and feel, period. It's built in. And so that can start from early childhood, right? That's how it was for me. I started from early childhood. I still struggle with those things today, right? And I'm working through them with God and Christ. And so once we start to see that, see, it's the intensity that I'm moving towards or recognize these feelings, we can go to God and say, I want to be different. I want to change. And we can actually turn our focus to other things, right? And that is becoming a new creature in Christ, right? That is becoming a new creature in God. God can change our hearts. Okay, and I want to tell you really quick right now, there's a great resource for you, totally free. If you go to becomeagoodman.com, you'll see the Roots of Addiction guidebook there. It's going to teach you multiple elements of where addiction comes from, including what I'm talking about right now, fear, shame, okay? And it's going to tell you about what types of things need to be present in your life to recover and what other things in your life drive addiction. Go to becomeagoodman.com, put your first name in and your email. I'll shoot you that for free. It is the Roots of Addiction guidebook. Again, becomeagoodman.com. So to work through addiction, we need to stop hiding our pain. This is one of the things that's been the hardest for me in my life as a recovering addict. Even after 8 years of sobriety from porn, drugs, alcohol, I struggle with this. Okay, I struggle to show up. I struggle to be real, to be vulnerable. I am afraid of getting on this podcast and actually being myself, right? I'm afraid when I get together in social situations and with family or with friends or with others, even in my relationship with my wife, I'm afraid of showing up and being real, being me, being vulnerable, letting other people see my struggles, see my pain, right? And that doesn't mean, it's not from a self-pitying place or a victimhood place, like, look at me, oh, I'm woe is me, I'm so downtrodden, I have so many hardships and trials. That's not honesty, right? That's not the vulnerability I'm talking about. I'm talking about owning your crap, okay? I'm talking about owning your weaknesses and your struggles. I'm talking about laughing about those weaknesses and struggles with others, fessing up to them and saying, the only reason I said that is because of this. You know, I struggle with such and such, but well, I'm just a weirdo. What can I say? You know, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm the genius at this, but what I'm saying is it is showing up, right? Again, something that all of us addicts struggle with. We need to stop hiding our pain. That is why groups are so powerful and important. That is why having a sponsor is so powerful and important when you're part of a 12-step program. Okay, when you can discuss your crap, your real deep-seated pains and emotions, your insecurities, and you can be real about them, that is when you will start to recover. And that you'll start to recover in a way that feels good long term. Okay, for years, I have stayed sober, not understanding many of these things, becoming better at them, but a lot of things that were hidden to me and not on the surface that I wasn't really dealing with. I'm now beginning to deal with them. And I'll learn more and more as time goes on. But for you, getting real about those insecurities you feel, and stop hiding from them, and stop covering them up with anger, and stop blaming them on other people, but saying, hey, I want people to think, for instance, that I'm intelligent, right? Or I want people to think that I'm funny. That's a point of insecurity for me. I want people to think well of me in those ways. And I do some pretty silly stuff trying to make that happen, right? Poking fun at that, being lighthearted about it can be really helpful. Being open about it, right? And that's being open with the people who are close to you. I'm not telling you to go out and tell everybody and their dog about your deepest, darkest secrets. What I am telling you is for the people who've earned it, the people who've earned the right to hear your true feelings, your insecurities, your weaknesses that you deal with, be real about them. If you're somebody who is continuously positive and you pride yourself on that positivity and you say, I don't want to even face the negative, I don't want to go there, watch yourself. Be careful, my friend. That's a slippery slope. Okay? Life has light and dark. Life is not just made up of light. Life has light and dark. That's yin and the yang. There is God. There is the devil. Okay? There are two sides of life. And if we fail to acknowledge the hard parts of life, the dark parts of life, they will eat away the rest of our life. They will take over and they will stop us from connecting genuinely with other people and building true, deep, and good relationships. So we need to be vulnerable if we want to work through guilt and shame addiction, if we want to work through perfectionism, if we want to work through any addiction, we need to start being real. And again, that's from a place of integrity, not self-pity, not victimhood. It is looking inside and it's saying, God, help me. I want to see what things I struggle with inside that's really going on under the surface. Why do I feel this anger? Why do I feel this insecurity? You know, where does this come from? And blaming no one else for it, but looking directly at it and saying, help me change, God. Help me change, Christ. Send me your grace to change. So, the other thing I want to talk about that we've already talked about a little bit is overcoming addiction and perfectionism requires us to look outward. Okay, so I've been talking about being real about your struggles. I've been talking about being vulnerable with the right people, right? So you can build genuine relationships. I've been talking about owning up to and seeing the darkness, right? Don't hide it or else it will fester. The other thing that we have to do if we want to recover long term, and more so if we want to live a peaceful life, a good life, and have a mind that we trust, that we love, right? We've got to look outward. We've got to look outward to other people. We've got to stop looking inward and being selfish. When we hurt someone else or we do wrong, we need to stop going into that habitual place that we have, which is to say, I'm wrong, I'm bad, how could I do this? Okay, in reality, And I was reading I've been reading a series, a fictional series called The Stormlight Archive. If anybody knows Brandon Sanderson, there's a part in it, one of the main characters, Dalinar, that talks about how he feels shame, he feels guilt, and his partner, Navani, tells him, hey, why are you such a self-indulgent person? Talking about his guilt and his shame that he goes through. And he's just shocked. He's like, how could you say that I'm being self-indulgent? I had never quite thought about it that way. And Dalinar, being the amazing person he is, takes that in stride and then learns from it. Hopefully I would be that good about it. But it's really true. Okay, when we indulge in shame and guilt, it is a self-indulgent kind of emotion. And I'm not sitting here condemning anyone for that. I am that guy. Okay. I struggle with that as much as anybody else, probably more than a lot of people. I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to be aware of that and see that. Okay. And we can. And when we see it, we can practice, instead of looking at ourselves when we do something wrong, look outward and say, what is this person going through right now? This person that I just wronged, what are they experiencing? Put myself in their shoes, right? Look at them and say, if I were them, how would I feel right now? And what would I need? Okay, so then instead of getting focused on the perfectionism of what do people think of me? What is this, you know, how do they perceive me? Or I can't believe I did this, or I'm not worthy of love now. How can I love them? How can they feel loved right now? And not making that about, I want them to see me as a good person, but making it about, I want them to feel safe. I want them to feel okay. I want them to feel loved. And we practice looking outward. And this fights our addiction. Okay, this fights the guilt and shame addiction. This fights the perfectionism. This fights any addiction that we have. Because we're changing the script. We're changing the game. Addiction and perfectionism can only function from a place of selfishness. That's the environment they need. If we change that and we start to look outward, look at other people around us and think of their feelings, think of the things they're going through, not with a bunch of pressure on ourselves to make sure that we're the ones who make them happy, okay, because that's another pitfall we can land into. The ego or Satan's temptations, or however you want to put it, is going to find a lot of different ways to get us to focus on the wrong thing when we think we're focusing on the right thing. That's why it's so important to depend on God. That's why it's so important to look to Christ. And so, when we start to do that, when we start to look outward, and we start to think of the feelings of others, we stop focusing on all of our crap, right? When we stop focusing on our crap, our addictions, our need for our addictions start to fade. Because the environment, the mental and emotional environment, is changing. It's transforming. We're establishing a new route to our life. Root, R-O-O-T. A new route from which sobriety can grow. Okay, we've built these habits and we've followed this path of acting selfishly. We can't do that anymore. We followed this path of letting guilt and shame rule our lives. We followed this path, perhaps, of perfectionism ruling our lives. We can't function from that place anymore. And we can't seek to try to do everything right, because we're never going to do everything right. Instead, we have to seek to make peace with the things that we do wrong and know that we're worthy of love all the same. And again, if you come from a Christian perspective, that's because Christ already paid that price. Christ already performed the atonement. You don't have to perform your own atonement. You don't have to feel like you're the one who's going to make the difference. Because the fact is, you're unworthy, and you always will be, because every one of us is. But Christ is worthy, and so our worth is given by the price that Christ paid. It's already there. And if you're not Christian, okay, think of that as the Tao, right? If you're Taoist, or if you're Buddhist, think of it as the oneness of all things, right? That we're all connected, we're all one. What is the worth of everything all together as one? It's limitless. It's It's without price. Therefore, you are without price because you are one with all of your brothers and sisters and with all things. So start looking outward. And the other thing that I want to say is looking upward. How do we do that? Something I've been practicing, you know, just to get real with you, for years, I practice these meditations that were like prayers. But I had a lot of belief in the positive psychology of prayer. And I really strategized my prayers and these kind of meditational prayers I was doing to activate positive psychology in my life. And I thought that, you know, prayer works because God helps you, but also prayer works because it's a positive psychology thing. And I did this for a lot of years. And you want to know what? It was good in some ways, but it's utter garbage in other ways. Prayer doesn't work because it's positive psychology. You can argue for that all day if you want. But when I pray to God sincerely and deeply, and when I say, God, I've screwed up my marriage, or God, I lost my job because I was a dope, right? Or God, I engaged in my addiction again. I relapsed again for the millionth time. And then I say, help me change. Help me change. And then things begin changing in my life. Almost without me even noticing, my motivations, my heart begins to change. That's not positive psych. That's not the psychological effects of prayer. That's the power of God. Okay, it's the power of Christ's grace or God's grace. That's what it is. And so my point is, whatever it is that you're going through in your life, be sincere with God. Don't go on in these vain repetitions, as the saying goes, in prayers. Make your prayers sincere. At the same time, don't focus all day long saying, God, make me better. God, do this for me. Do that for me. God, don't all day focus on yourself. Do train your mind and try to focus outward on other people in your prayers. What is it that they are in need of? How is it that you can change? How is it that God can help you change to be a better blessing to those around you, especially those in your family? Pray for that and be sincere. And if you don't feel it, say, God, I don't feel this right now. I don't feel care for this person in my life because I'm too selfish. Help me be different. I want to feel empathy. I want to feel compassion. And God will answer your prayers. So we have to turn outward and we have to turn upward in a genuine, sincere way. And again, if you are not Christian, what does that look like for you? What is sincere? And go that route. And I do testify from my end that when we turn to Jesus Christ, it leads to miraculous occurrences in our lives. And that's my background. I'm Christian, so I don't know what it's like or how it feels for other people of other faiths. But I think that God honors their practices when they are genuine and sincere. So I want to end just with a few kind of practical things for you to start doing in your life, other than those that I've talked about on this episode. But these are things to replace perfectionism, guilt, shame. Okay, number one is prayer, like we just talked about. You got to be praying every day, man. You have to pray every day. Okay, I don't care who you are. If you want to experience long-lasting sobriety that brings you peace, I've never seen anybody do it without daily prayer. And I know that there's Buddhists out there and Taoists out there and people who do meditation on a daily basis, and that works great for them. And maybe you've recovered through meditation, and I think that's awesome. I'm just saying, in my experience with the people that I've talked to and in my own life with working my sobriety, especially to have sobriety that doesn't suck and I'm bitter about the whole time, but sobriety that actually feels good and feels right. I've got to be praying every day. And so for me, that looks like prayer in the morning. It looks like some prayers I say throughout the day for God's help. And again, trying to focus on, okay, what do other people around me need? God, how can you empower me to help other people? Right? Because I'm trying to train myself out of all those selfish habits that have led to my addictions. And so in the mornings, you know, and this is completely personal to you, but I probably spend about 20 minutes praying. That might seem like a freaking long time, and it kind of is, but I need that help. You know, I need that. And I spend some time in scripture study as well, right? Reading of the Bible. And I'm LDS, right? I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I love the Book of Mormon. It's changed my life. It's completely changed my life. I wouldn't be sober without it. So I spend time reading those books. They empower my life. And those are the genuine books for me that I know to be true. Okay, so whatever that is for you, whatever books those are for you that you know you've got to read, you've got to partake of every day, you need to partake of them every day. And why is that? Is God up there like, okay, as soon as you read of my holy Bible, then I'll bless you? I don't really think so. I think it's more so that we live down here in this fallen world, and the only way to get good and peace into our hearts is we have to invite it in. We've got to invite it in. That's just the law of the universe. All right, if you're going out and you're drinking and you're watching crude movies with violence and sex, and you're, you know, eating food that's crap for your body, and that's what you're doing all the time, well, don't be surprised when there's a lot of misery in your life. Right? And that's not a condemnation, it's just simply calling out the truth. It's just the fact of how it works. That's life. If we want to feel peace, if we want to be sober, we've got to do the things that bring peace and sobriety. And God can empower us and motivate us to do those things. He can. And He will when we ask for that. Even if we don't desire to change, even if we're just like, man, I just love my addiction. I love engaging in the pleasure, and I don't want to give up porn, or I don't want to give up alcohol. If we say, God, help me to want it. Help me to want it. I testify to you, I've done that with multiple things in my life. Help me to want this, God, because I don't want it. And God will answer you. Sometimes it's slow, but God will answer you. And you will start to feel motivated to change. You watch it happen. So you got to be praying. You got to be partaking of Scripture. Be open, be vulnerable. Okay, something I've been telling myself these days that's been helping me. When I go to spend time with friends or I go to visit a neighbor, I say, God, help me to be open and vulnerable. Help me to be real. When I say that simple prayer, I'm telling you, I testify to you that I have had some interactions with people that they've been special beyond belief. They've been powerful, things that I could never have created myself, that I just realized, wow, that's a blessing. That's a blessing. So be open and be vulnerable in the right ways, not from a place of self-pity or victimhood, but being real about who you are. People know you have weaknesses. People know you have strengths. You know the same about other people. Accept their weaknesses. Accept their strengths. See them and say, we've all got them, man. And laugh about your weaknesses with other people. I'm telling you, when you can do that, other people will feel more accepted and more able to share their weaknesses and admit to them and laugh about them. And you will help people heal. The other thing that you got to do is practice genuine empathy. Okay, and depending on who you are, maybe that's something that you're already good with. I don't know. Depends on how addiction has been for you. Depends on how your mind works. But really putting yourself in other people's shoes, sitting there and deeply listening to them, engaging with them. What are things like for them? What are they going through? Listen. Listen to them and make your life about serving others. And again, you're not going to be perfect at that. But that's kind of the point, is that you don't expect perfection of yourself or anyone else. And if that's something you struggle with, it's something I've struggled with that throughout my life, of actually serving others and coming outside myself. Tell God, man, I suck at this. I want to change. Help me. Help me change, please. And God will start to help you. So I just want to close off with a scripture. Again, this is just kind of the new direction I'm going with my podcast. This is from Psalms, chapter 18, verse 2 through 3. And it says, "The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call to the Lord, who is worthy of praise, and I am saved from my enemies." Keep seeking for sobriety, my friend. Keep up the good fight. If you want some help, or if you have specific questions, if you liked this podcast, reach out to me, jake@becomeagoodman.com. I'd love to hear from you. And again, I just need to throw out there, go to becomeagoodman.com and get the free Roots of Addiction guidebook. It's going to share some things with you that I think will give you some great insights into your addiction. It's easy to get. Put in your first name, put in your email, press download, I'll shoot it over to you. And then the last thing is just rate this podcast. Okay, I want this podcast to reach as many people as possible. If you like it, go on there and give me a rating. If you're on Spotify or Google Podcasts, wherever you're at listening to this, give me that rating. It would help me out a lot and help me expand this channel. So I hope you've enjoyed the podcast today. God is with you, my friend. Depend on God, go to God. You know, keep learning, keep walking one step at a time. You're not going to learn everything all at once. Remember that slips and relapses, mistakes, they're failures, but failure is just an opportunity to learn. Use it as an opportunity to learn. If you don't feel like learning from it, or you feel like you screwed up and it's irreparable, tell God about that. And God will help you see it differently. So again, I hope this was helpful for you. Much love to you, my friend. God bless. Everything expressed on the No More Desire podcast are the opinions of the host and participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of a qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.